Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two.
You don't have anything?
No.
You're not inspired by looking at my face right now? Give me two adjectives right now.
I have literally nothing.
Two
thirsty,
thoughtless, I don't know, funny.
Two empty-headed ladies who know mediums and nothing about Formula One.
En este Gran Premio de España tenemos una carrera de redención.
Chaos. After one of the most exciting races thus far, we'll cover a groundbreaking performance for Mercedes, painfully woeful reliability issues for this season's top contenders, and how team orders will shape the rest of the season.
I'm Maya.
And I'm Zaylee. Lights out and away we go! What's the headline number one that we should say first for this race?
Definitely the one that's the most pop culture.
Okay. Drake.
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 Drake put down a $300,000 Canadian dollar bet on Charles Leclerc winning the Spanish Grand Prix.
He lost the bet.
Obviously, he lost
He lost. What is that in USD? $233,000 in American dollars, which if I had his kind of money, it made me curious just about how many people are betting on Formula One races writ large. Like, how much money is this industry specifically for this sport?
Yeah.
But do you think that he bet on the right person for this race?
Between him and Max, I feel like it was a little bit of a toss-up. Mm-hmm. I think Charles was maybe a safer bet, but it ended up not working out. Do you think he bet on the right person? Would you have bet on Max?
I think if I was a betting man and was looking at all the stats and stuff, I would have bet on Max.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is usually the safer bet, and based on what we know about just watching them during practice, Max was the safer bet. But then again, Max's DRS wasn't working during qualifying. And I guess it just, because it didn't really affect his qualifying lap, because Leclerc was so far ahead, people just chucked it up. Like, no one was really talking about the fact that the DRS could not continue to not be working during the actual Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And I will say that the reliability issues that all the Red Bull-powered cars had this weekend leading up to the race gave me pause, and I probably wouldn't have bet him. Maybe Drake was right by betting on Charles, yeah.
Drake said that this was his first, he's like kind of nervous, my first Formula One bet. You know, who knows if it'll be his last, but. Okay, what else do we have?
Aston Martin copying Red Bull.
Yep.
They have a Aston Martin A car and an Aston Martin B car, and this weekend they unveiled a car that looked eerily similar to Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
The FIA was invited to the factory to basically investigate it and do a checkup. The FIA...
Similar to Red Bull, you mean?
Yeah, sorry, I meant Red Bull. So basically, the FIA got invited to their factory, and Aston Martin allegedly was able to prove that they had been working on that car even before the season had started. And then they didn't end up doing that well this weekend anyway, which is kind of funny. It doesn't even matter.
I feel like there's every few times a season there are these allegations that come out where it's like copying. And like most times I feel like nothing really comes of it. I feel like there have been a few times like Force India, Pink Mercedes kind of vibes where like it goes further.
That was the same team.
You're so right.
It's always them. It would be, I feel like it's almost, if I were the FIA, it would be too big of a deal to say, yes, they're cheating. Okay, what do they do? They can't be in the races for the rest of the season.
No, and I also feel like if that turned out to be, if those claims are not to have weight to them, I feel like it said something poor about like the rules of Formula One to where like these teams are able to copy each other. Does that make sense? Like, it's kind of like, is the sport really like more simple than we think to the point where someone would be like,
yeah, the FIA basically can't rule. There's no way to win here.
Yeah.
There's no way that they're going to say, yep, they were cheating, pack it up. Only 9 teams left on the grid now. Like, after all the money that they've invested, it's just too much. Yeah, and you're right that they would basically be admitting, yeah, it's easy to cheat. Just email each other files.
These are not as proprietary as you would think, like some of these formulas.
Another thing that happened for the first time this week, or this season, is that Hamilton sort of admitted that he wasn't getting as much of the car out of the car as Russell is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was a seismic shift.
Admission.
Huge admission.
Yeah.
And the journalist who was asking the question went like, oh, I think this is the first time you're saying anything like that, Lewis. Like, she literally
the elephant in the room
said that. And he was kind of like, yeah, it's been harder. I do not have as much of a handle on the car. Clearly the car is a, you know, P3 achievable potential car.
And he hasn't been the one to put that car in that
position.
Right,
and he's like, I can't handle the rear, bro. I can't handle it. He didn't say that. But he said he was having trouble with the rear. Lando Norris was sick.
Yeah.
My poor baby. He tested negative for COVID. But
yeah,
he
that
looked,
would be a bummer.
He looked
bad.
Sick.
Yeah,
sick.
He has tonsillitis, they found out afterwards.
Wow.
Which, have you ever had tonsillitis?
No, I don't think
Me
so.
Neither.
Another thing that happened this weekend is that all of these big upgrades came.
Yeah.
All of these huge upgrades. Ferrari, Red Bull, Aston Martin, Alfa Romeo. So Aston Martin, obviously, with the cheating car, the Red Bull knockoff. Alfa Romeo brought a new wing and brought some weight loss onto the car. Everyone's car is trying to lose weight really badly, really fast. But Red Bull was able to bring the car closer to the weight limit. Mercedes brought back their no side pod design.
The debate, yeah.
And another thing that happened in P3, I'm switching gears now, sorry.
Yeah, let's move on.
Switching gears. Another thing that happened in P3 is that Hamilton was driving and he's trying to, you know, see the race times. And he's like, whose times are you showing me on my dashboard? And they're like, we're showing you George's. And he's like, I only want to ever see the fastest times. Like, he was just
that.
So upset.
I really want to know more about that team dynamic.
Girl,
I
it's
really
fraught.
Want to know, like, what are their conversations? Him and Valtteri were like, I actually think they were kind of friends. And they're very different people. But you get, like, a sense of, like,
camaraderie
and understanding between them. With George, I'm like, I don't really know.
I think they snipe at each other often.
In public?
Yeah, in public, in private.
I think
I'm sure
it's hard. There's so many dynamics there because I think the way that they treat Lewis on that team is like with this sense of deference. And it's like, this car is not good enough for him. This car is not good enough for a 7-time world champion. Meanwhile, George is like out racing, out qualifying, doing all of these things. And I'm wondering if George feels a chip on his shoulder with how he's being treated in the team, and I don't know.
George is has gotten lucky quite a couple of times. But the thing is, part of winning, I think, in F1 is luck.
Mm.
You have to get lucky. And so I just think, I don't know what the F1 gods are doing, but I feel like they're swaying things toward George in a weird way. What? I believe in the F1
gods. You're not giving him his flowers at all.
No, he is obviously doing such a good job.
Yeah.
He's always there. And this race was a turning point for me. Oh, no, girl.
Disagree. Hamilton was yours?
Yes, obviously. Yeah. And he won driver of the day. Hamilton was the fastest man on track this race.
Yes.
The fastest man on track.
He was putting in purple sectors, bro.
Yeah. He probably... We will never know what would have happened, you know, but
had
just
not
saying.
Spun out earlier or like had that interaction with, who was it?
Had that interaction with Kevin Magnussen.
K-Mag. Can I just also ask if you believe in this Monaco curse? Do you believe in it? 2017 in an F2 feature race, Leclerc was suspended. 2017 F2 sprint race, he had an electrical failure. 2018 in Monaco, brake failure. I mean, the list goes on and on. Do you believe that there is a Monaco curse? You believe in F1 gods.
I do believe in F1 gods.
Charles Leclerc.
I do believe in F1 gods. I do believe in F1 gods. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking. I don't believe they've cursed Leclerc. First of all, just for the listeners to understand, the F1 gods, I think, are doing things for the storyline, basically.
Okay. So it's kind of
they
like
create
the Netflix
rivalries.
Producers.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. But they're a little more, they obviously... They have more gravitas than the Netflix producers because they understand
like
the long.
Gods.
Yes, they're like Greek gods.
Okay.
They understand the long.
The long game.
The long game. And so it's why I believe Hamilton has never surpassed Michael Schumacher's record. Sorry. I think that they're holding off for some reason. I can't
There's
figure out
be a
why.
Better time.
Or they'll just make it so that no driver has ever broken that record. And when they finally do in 21-23, it'll be a huge deal.
But wouldn't it be a great story if, for the F1 gods, if anyone's listening, like, this is my advice.
If Leclerc wins
this next month,
but I don't
race.
Think he will. I don't think there's a curse. And I don't think the F1 gods are going to make it so that he doesn't finish. I think they're going to make it so that he gets third.
Close?
Third.
That's so tough.
Or something else happens. But I don't think it's going to be a DNF. What do you think?
Do I think he's cursed? I think...
it's a tough question.
It is.
He literally also crashed...
the 2022... They like had the Monaco Grand Prix showcase.
So you believe in a curse?
I kind of believe in the curse a little bit. But I also think... I think he's going to win this next race. Don't know why I'm saying it, but I'm just going to put it in the air.
Drake.
I'm not going to bet on it because I don't have money for that, but I just want him to because I think it'll be a really nice story to be like, look at
I'll bet
times.
You $30 that he won't. Not $300,000.
Oh my God, we're doing a bet?
$30.
Can we cut that to 15?
Okay, 15. I'll cut it to 15. $15, Leclerc won't win because I believe the F1 gods just for some reason don't want him to.
Are holding off.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Let's bet. You guys are hearing this first bet happen.
You believe in the curse and you're betting against it.
No,
which is-
but I believe... No. Oh my God, that sounds so stupid. I kind of believe in the curse, but I do think that it will be broken. Like, I think the F1 gods are going to come together and make it so that he wins this race. I think it'd be a good story.
Okay, so let's get to qualifying. Vettel was shocked he didn't make it out of Q1. I think he was like, no way. He was literally like, they had to tell him, you didn't make it, come back to the pits. And he was shocked.
Like,
which
really?
Yeah. He was like, really? Alonso didn't make it out of Q1, which is shocking because it was his home race. Really sad.
I saw this thing about Mick Schumacher as well being his first Q3 appearance.
His brakes were on fire. And what's crazy is that the Haas's were both in Q2 and they brought no upgrades to this race.
Yes, yes, yes. There are so many memes about that. It's like Haas is like, I'm not going to spend money on these upgrades when we can make a perfectly good car run the same.
Yep.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's the Haas motto.
I'm happy for Mick. I'm happy
Me
for
too.
Mick.
Me too. I think he's great. I want him to succeed.
And also, Charles made P1, which was crazy because he had this really scary spin. Mm. And just no one thought he was going to come back from that. But he came into the pits, put on new tires, and then pulled a second and a half. He improved on his time by a second and a half.
Wow.
And so, obviously, Max came in second in P2. And Max had an issue with his DRS. And he was kind of blaming not getting the podium position on his DRS. But the thing is, even with that DRS, bro... You're not giving what Charles Leclerc gave. Charles Leclerc gave. It was crazy.
Giving.
He gave. Norris was outqualified by his teammate Ricardo. Yep. Driver error. And this just reminded me of last season when Lando was such a powerful driver at the first half of the season.
I completely agree.
And then he had that rainy, spooky race, and all of a sudden he was just anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that this season, this race actually. I was thinking about the comment that's, you know, everyone knows it, where Hamilton's like, great driver, Lando. Mm-hmm. And just like how last season he was putting in these incredibly impressive performances. This season, I feel like less so.
I think he always starts off really hot and then peters out. He was bored. I mean, I said bored. He did have tonsillitis.
Yeah, yeah, he was sick. And that's what he said afterwards. After this race. He's like, it's just not a good day for me. My best performance.
Yeah. But he still did well.
Yeah, relatively, I think so.
All right, so let's get into the race. So what were the standings?
The standings. We have in pole position, Charles Leclerc.
Boom, always.
Then we have Max. Then we have Carlos. Then we have George Russell.
Yep, in fourth.
Which is impressive. We have Perez in fifth, Lewis in sixth, which is also impressive. Valtteri in seventh.
What do you think is impressive? That Lewis is in sixth? That Perez split the car?
I think it's impressive to see. Well, first of all, just hearing back from qualifying and free practice, how much better Mercedes is doing in this past. Mm-hmm. Just in this. In the section of the competition so far. So, I don't know. I just like to see that he's starting.
Yeah. Bad day for Perez, though.
Valtteri in seventh. Kevin Magnussen in eighth. Ricardo in ninth. And Mick in tenth. And Lando in 11th.
Yeah. And then for the rest of the grid, it's Ocon, Tsunoda, Gasly, Zhou, Vettel, Alonso, Stroll, Albon, Latifi. All right. So, let's talk a little bit about the track. 74% of successes have come from pole.
Yeah. That's really cool. There's two DRS zones. There's turn 1 and turn 10 are the best places to overtake. One of the most exciting things to me is when I see people do these overtakes in different kinds of corners
exactly,
and in places where these things are not usually done. I find that
really and a lot of that happened during this race. I think turns 2, 3, 4
Five,
people
I
were, yeah, people were doing some. It looked kind of dangerous, but I was like, I don't think I would have done that. But interesting. Go off.
They were talking about how soft tires are the race favorite. Everybody started on soft tires except for Lewis Hamilton, which I'm not quite sure why. And I think that did bite him in the ass a little bit later.
So, so let's go right to the start because I'm curious whether you think that Hamilton had a bad start or a good start.
I think he had a good start. I think he immediately was hunting down Carlos Sainz in that fourth position.
Yeah.
So I think his reaction time was really good. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I was going to ask, do you think that it was his fault that he kind of got into it with Kevin Magnussen?
No. I think that was a racing incident. Do you?
Yeah, I think it was a racing incident. I actually would even put the onus more on Kevin Magnussen. Which is why I'm like, I think he had a really good, I think he maybe would have won this race.
I low-key maybe was like.
Maybe I'm a Merc, just because I'm a Merc fan, yeah. Obvi, but I just think Hamilton would have won this race. He was so fast. He was so aggressive. He was
making up places like nobody's business.
Yeah. He did have that. He got a black and white flag wave.
Yes. For
lap track limits.
Track limits.
Track limits, but even still, he was going super fast, and he curtailed it. I don't think he got another track time deleted after that. But just ahead of Hamilton, Charles moved over to cover off Max and retained his lead.
Yep.
Carlos was passed by George Russell, which is why he ended up battling with Hamilton later because of his anti-stall going off.
So at this point, too, because of the puncture, Lewis is like, I would save this engine if I were you. So he kind of like already from jump has this very defeatist mentality because he's falling. And he did fall back, obviously, a few places. I don't remember how many specifically.
If you follow us on Twitter, he ended up in 19th.
Yeah.
He was only ahead of Kevin Magnussen. Yeah. But if you follow us on Twitter, I posted that with the meme like, stand up. Because I was just like, Lewis, stand the fuck up.
Okay, so in lap two, Charles is leading like crazy. He's doing really well. Yeah. Mick Schumacher, this was fun for me. Mick Schumacher was up in sixth place, and that's the highest he's ever been in a Grand Prix, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton does pit for his puncture. It is kind of a long pit, I think. I don't know. I didn't write down how many seconds it was specifically, but.
Yeah, he had a bit of trouble, but it's almost like he was a minute behind the person in front of him. Like,
yeah.
It was crazy, the gap. So it's almost like I wasn't even paying attention to Hamilton until later in the race.
Yeah.
But on lap seven, Alonso gets ahead of Vettel. And also on lap seven, Carlos spins out on turn four.
What's going on with the spinning?
Well, that happened most times on turn four. I think
and they were like, is there something going on?
Yeah,
tailwind. I was like, wait, these things can be affected by wind now? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Blowing like a leaf in the wind, bro.
So he ends up in 11th. And then lap nine, Perez is right on George's tail. And George is just working it from behind. He's literally like rotating. He's backing that ass up, moving in different directions.
It was sexy to me. I mean, I'm not attracted to him, but it was so sexy how clean it was and smooth. And it seemed like he had so much control of the car because every maneuver, and this is what the commentators were saying, like, there's nothing here that he's doing that is. Like, I don't know. He's not
clean.
Like a Max. Yes. He's not like a Max that's like, all over the track being wild. Like, it was super clean.
It was so super thoughtful.
And thoughtful. Yeah.
And they were saying, oh, this must have been practiced. This must have been.
Yeah.
He must have been thinking in his head about where he could place that car. But so lap 11, he's still defending against Sergio Perez. And that's the first time that there's this Red Bull switcheroo.
Yes.
They're like, okay, Perez can't get him. Let's switch to have Max in the front. We didn't hear the radio language, but the commentators.
Assume that would happen. Yeah,
that there was just some choreography going there. Lap 11, we also get the first pits of the race, so we know that, okay, this is a two-stop for most people.
Yes.
Because it happened early.
Then we see, and by lap 12, these cool car warnings for Russell. When he's like, why am I getting this cool car sign? I think he like wasn't running. I don't know. I don't know what he said. I don't remember exactly. But they were just like, be careful. Because
yeah, they were like, it's real.
It's real. Yes, that's what is this? But I also think that's related to the fuel thing. Like the fuel in the car actually getting too hot and it overheats the engine.
Yeah. And I just want to mention that at this moment in the race, Leclerc he's 9 seconds in front.
He's on vacation.
They're not focusing on him. They're like, all right, P1, he got away at the start. He's good.
Yeah.
Just saying that for just adding a little foreshadowing for what will come later, because it's crazy how confident everyone was that he was going to finish this race and out front.
Agreed.
Drake was probably like, I just made my $700,000.
He said, oh, it's calm. It's calm for me. In the next few laps, we start to see Max's DRS failing.
Yes.
That, were you laughing or?
I was
laughing.
Yeah, because you're anti-Max.
I was laughing.
And so, of course, you're cackling at his failures.
But also, it's just the way that he was on the radio, dude. It's like it's this aggressive. And the commentators were like, you don't really get anywhere by being like angry in the car. You don't. When you drive angry, it doesn't improve your performance. And he was just, you can tell like the panic and like the freaking out that he was doing about the DRS.
I mean, but what would you do? Like, you're sitting behind. It's not working. And if it's not working for the rest of the race, because DRS... We've explained it before. It's what drivers basically use in this what do you call it? In this generation of Formula One cars, you cannot overtake without DRS.
Yeah.
So him not having it, I understand why it would be like, bro.
He was really tight.
If I don't have DRS, I'm a sitting duck. Like, anyone behind me, anyone in front of me, I lost this race basically with no DRS.
Another thing that was interesting about this section of the race too was that Max and George just haven't had very many interactions
at all
on the track in general as racers, and I just found it weird to see them battling because I'm like,
never seen it.
Never seen it.
It's like they don't go to the same school or
right, something. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like seeing your teacher out at the grocery store. It's like, what are we doing here?
So lap 14, Russell and Max both pit same time. Their pits are within a tenth of each other. And on lap 14, Carlos passes Ocon into ninth. So Carlos is starting to get... He was down in 11th. So he's starting to, catch back up to his original place. Lap 18, Lewis is now in 16th. Just a reminder about Lewis all the way in the back there. He's becoming more relevant. I was just like checking the scoreboard on the side, the
you
time
see
charts,
it move
and
up,
I was just
yeah.
like, huh, okay, 16th. Also in lap 18, that's when Max starts to really freak out. He's like, turn on the fucking DRS.
Yep.
He's pressing the DRS so much.
That
he's,
is
he's
so
like
funny.
Triggering the. It's like a video game. He's like,
they're like, press
it
one time.
Yeah, one time, Max. And he's like, I'm pressing it because I'm like, they're like arguing over the radio. And I also, this is around the same time that he makes his first mistake of the season. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty positive that this is, if not the first, one of the first mistakes
what
that
are
he's
you
made.
Referring to?
I'm referring to he goes on to curb. On the
turn
curbs
eight.
On turn eight, and then he has to like kind of recover himself. It's literally so rare that Max makes mistakes.
It's because he's panicking like that. I feel
he's panicking.
It's not even panic. It's probably panic, but it's like this angry. Like I could get the sense when he was driving behind George, and I was just so impressed because it was this long stretch of the race where George is just like, nope. nope, you're not gonna overtake me. And I could just feel that like frustration where he's like, why isn't this working? And I think it really affected his driving today.
Around lap 19, his DRS still turns back on, but he still can't overtake.
He picked up a lot of understeer in that moment as well, I think.
Lap 24, he's alongside George, and they're like, that was the
that
most
was
exciting.
So juicy.
It was so good.
George says blimey also.
he's
saw that?
Blimey.
It's ridiculous. At this point, we also think that Perez is on a one-stop strategy. That is kind of like what we all understand through the radio message, but that ends up not happening.
And this is the first time that, so around that was lap 24 when they had that really close encounter. Lap 27, Perez asks Red Bull to get in front of Max. He's like, I can do this. I'm
on
fresher
tires. George.
Let me overtake George. Let me get in front. And I think they basically ignore him.
They do.
Yeah.
It's not right, bro.
It's not right. And while all this is happening, we just hear Charles, no.
Yeah.
What happened? It was so sad and shocking. That's when I knew
that
this race
was
going to be a turn up.
Yeah.
Like when that happened, I was like, oh, this is actually
juicy.
This is giving. This race is reminding me of the first races of this season.
So we see that his engine failed. Or I think at the time they weren't sure what the reason was, but that's what happened.
And what that means is that Leclerc is now leading the Grand Prix, bro.
Leclerc?
I'm sorry, Russell. What that means,
no,
Leclerc went off.
No, that took me out,
is that
bro.
Russell is leading the Grand Prix.
Yeah, this is the fun thing about the sport is like one person being out can totally change the nature of the race.
Crazy.
And yeah, you just have to hold on tight.
And George was handling himself so well.
He's my driver of the day. I'm saying it. He is my driver of the day.
Yeah, maybe I just don't like him enough. Maybe he does deserve driver of the day.
That's
he
my
does.
Driver.
That defense was, he was giving Minister of Defense level.
He's
Perez
moved
level
up. He's been promoted, bro. He has a new job. He's Minister of Defense.
Around 29, Verstappen pits for the first time for the undercut. So then what's left is Russell defending against Perez.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting to see how they sort of, how Red Bull was switching strategies between this reliance on DRS. It's kind of like this, not that DRS is a bonus, but like, yeah, it's like a nice little thing to have. But instead of like doing that, they went to, okay, like let's now pit and just use fresh tires in order to get ahead. And it ends up working.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like that's just a different kind of strategy instead of like just trying to, I mean, in those moments where he was trying to overtake, he was like in that dirty air, he's messing with his tires. Like, yeah, it's just interesting to see how he decided to go a different route.
Very cool. And one of my favorite things about this sport is how much thought it takes. It's cool to think about. It's cool to be like, where are we?
Where are
think
we? About it.
George comes into the pits in order to avoid battling with Verstappen and to cover off Bottas, which at this point is like, is that his target for this race?
I know. Beef history.
And then, so once both Red Bulls have pitted, around lap 48 is when we hear the team orders, which was super devastating. They said, you're on a different strategy to Max. If he's quicker, we let him through. And Perez was just like, that's very unfair, but okay.
I think it is so wrong.
It is extremely wrong, especially since we're on race six. We're on race six. Like, if this was, you know, race 13. But I also wished that Perez didn't listen.
That he was like, nope, I'm going to battle this guy.
Because I think that by doing this, Perez doesn't realize how valuable he is to this team. I think they've also indoctrinated him into the belief that Red Bull is king, you know,
Christian Horner.
And who's that guy who's like the god Helmut Marko. They make all the decisions. But it's like, actually,
you're in the car.
Who else are they going to replace Perez with? Who else? There's no other person, and I think that Perez doesn't know. I think it's hard to do this when everyone around you is telling you that Max, but Perez also has a position, he has a role to play, and he is irreplaceable. To me, he's irreplaceable.
Absolutely. And I don't like that his success on this team is based on him being subservient. Like, mm-hmm. I hate that, and I think that's very demeaning, and I think it's also just, it does a disservice to what he can do in the car. It's like, we need to be able, like, I just think it's stupid if we're not allowing drivers to actually show and, just show what they can do and what the car can do. Like, given, you know, with a capable driver, and he is absolutely, and we see this in this race, and absolutely a capable driver.
So, but this is a contrast to how you felt about the Alpines battling. Earlier this season, the Alpines were battling Ocon and Alonso, and you felt like it was kind of silly that they allowed them to battle. Basically.
Yeah, but I think that's different because it wasn't like they were battling for first and second. In the case of Ocon and Alonso, I feel like the greater good of the team was just like,
being compromised.
Yeah, that wasn't at the forefront. Yeah. And I feel like in this situation for Red Bull, it's like
one of them would have made it to first.
Yeah. But I guess that's also just colored by like Max is not my favorite driver. So like for me, Sergio Perez winning is also does serve the greater good. I think someone else who's a very big Max fan or who's rooting for that, it's like this would affect the greater good of the team.
35% of 35% of merchandise sold by the Red Bull team is Perez merchandise that is sent to Mexico.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
That of the entire globe, that these Mexican fans are going crazy for Perez and want that merch. Like, that's 35% of Red Bull's merchandise sales. And I think that Red Bull has clearly prioritized Max as a driver. And I think this says something about the fact that they don't think that their fans want to see Perez winning.
They don't.
And I think they misunderstand their fans in that way. Like, I don't think that any fans would be upset if they let the two drivers really battle it out for first. But now they've left. This is a huge conversation, a huge news story, the fact that they did this with these two drivers so early on in the season. And I feel like for Horner, the number one thing is a championship. And he understands that Max probably is more likely to win the championship.
Mm.
But they don't think the sort of cultural game.
What do you mean?
I don't think
game?
Like this early in the season, for example, Mercedes would go, oh, we're going to switch around the drivers, because I think they want their team culture to be perceived a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
McLaren does the same thing. They want their team culture to be perceived as this happy-go-lucky place where everyone is super supportive. I don't think that Red Bull really cares how people basically perceive the culture publicly, if that makes sense. They're like, you go to the back because we want to win. And they're not thinking about how people come to be fans of a team, if that makes sense. Like, they're not thinking about how people think it works there. I would want people to think that it's fair at Red Bull.
It's a different style of running the team. And it's what you're saying is reminding me of the race last season where Daniel Ricciardo won Monza.
Yeah.
Monza.
Mm-hmm.
And he was first, and I think it was a 1-2, and Lando was second. And I remember during that race, that was an example in which I think Lando maybe could have been first.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Lando did have more driver's points at that point. He was a more successful driver even last season.
Yeah.
And that's an example in which I was like, okay, you could have seen a world in which the team engineers were like, let Lando through. Lando should be first.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. Like, Daniel Ricciardo was not allowed to win, but he won the race, and that's what it was. And I don't know. It just would have made, quote-unquote, more sense for Lando to win. But
they didn't even let him battle Ricciardo, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a totally a different way of thinking about the team. And I think that win for Daniel was so important.
Yes.
That win for the team culture was important. For the team culture was very important, I feel like. Because they're like, he's got his groove back. Like, it.
Right.
Those wins, like, shape how, yeah, it's not just about the championship, obviously.
Right,
it's
right.
Also about the culture of the
team.
Yes,
you're so right. Lando is clearly their number one driver. But
absolutely.
At that moment, they allowed basically Ricciardo fans to have their to celebrate him in that moment. And that's exactly what's happened. It's a great parallel to what's happening here. It's like, clearly Max is the number one driver, but why not allow
Sergio through
the people who are buying 35% of your merchandise in Mexico? Like it would have been lit. It would have been lit. And we don't know if he would have won, but it would have been lit.
I just don't even see a world in which they'll let it happen at all this season. And that to me is like, if I was a driver, I don't know. It would be a reckoning. That would be a reckoning moment. It's like, can I win in this car?
One other thing that I want to mention is that Perez literally didn't make a mistake this race.
He didn't set a foot wrong.
Not that, obviously, Max had an issue with DRS, but that's a luck thing to me. And Perez wasn't the one that, you know, had that little spin. He didn't make any mistakes the way Max did this race. And so that's why it's also doubly unfair.
We digress.
I'm skipping now to lap 52. George puts on a set of softs because they're confident that they can overtake Bottas and get the position back, which he does at lap 53 with the help of Bottas locking up, which he gets so nervous.
Because that to me was a mechanical thing, not like his driving style that made that happen.
I think a lockup has to do
like
with
when the tire
wear.
Seizes or something, right?
Not seizes, yeah, but. And he did say right after that lockup, or maybe later on, he was like, okay, clearly we made a mistake.
Yeah,
he was like, because he was the only, I think he did a one stop instead of a two stop.
And this race, one of the things they talked about was like a three stop was the best strategy for this, because it was just so hot that the tires are wearing and tearing.
Yeah. But so then Sainz is in jeopardy of losing his place to Hamilton, who has now surpassed his target of eighth place, hot on the heels of Bottas and Sainz. He's fighting for fourth. Just after Sainz gets ahead of Bottas, Hamilton gets ahead of Bottas too, and so Hamilton is up into fourth. He's ahead of Sainz, but then
Sainz
comes these big, you know, DNF risk messages.
That
it comes
was
for
crazy.
Hamilton
I never
and
heard
George.
That.
Lifting coast. So that DNF message leaves Lewis a sitting duck, and so he, instead of
the
being able
leak.
To get fourth, he gets fifth.
Yeah.
Which is still such an impressive performance, but fourth would have been... I just, something about fourth is better to me. The silver arrows.
More points.
So you have, for the final standings, Max, Perez, Russell, Sainz, splitting the two Mercedes, Hamilton behind, then Bottas, Ocon, Lando up to eighth, Alonso, Tsunoda, Vettel, Ricciardo, Gasly, Schumacher, Stroll, Latifi, Magnussen, Albon in 18th place.
Yeah.
He's like kind of nowhere. Both Williams were kind of nowhere this race.
What?
And then lastly, Leclerc and Zhou did not finish.
Horrible. Who's your driver of the day, Zaylee?
My driver of the day is, you're kind of convincing me, it's still Hamilton to me, because through no fault of his own, he ended up in 19th place. And he made up 14th places. Only Hamilton could do that.
Yeah.
I feel like they're just, even though he seemed like a loser, there's just something about him that is very affected by the circumstances, and he just like pulls it out. There's just some extra store of expertise.
That took me out.
Energy, masterfulness. There's just something extra that comes from his soul that I think that like drives him. That goes further than just what most drivers do, and it's inspiring, frankly. It inspires me.
I've already said this a million times, but my driver of the day was absolutely George. Yeah. And you know that it must have been a good drive for me to say that, because I don't even like George that much. But I was just so impressed with how he was defending against Max in a car that is kind of a, not worse, but not performing that well this season.
Yeah.
It was really impressive to me.
Just to co-sign you, I guess, I am, this race has me second guessing how much I don't like Russell, because it was sexy.
It was sexy.
So
it was clean.
Well done.
Sexy and smooth. Like it was a different style of driving. It's not like an erratic. It gives me, like Alonso, Ocon, those kind of drivers, Max, like these people have different driving styles. This was super clean. It was fun to watch. What do you think about best radio?
Best team radio was the interaction between Hamilton and team to me. Just him when he first got out being like, all right, I think guys, we just saved the engine and just give
drama,
up, basically.
Drama.
And it that interaction is just so emblematic of the kind of moodiness and the kind of person that he is, and what it takes to be him, what it takes to be such a dominant champion. These people, like, they wear their heart on. There's something else psychological going on there. We've spoken about it before.
Yeah.
But then also to see the way they handle him and the way they're just like, no, our target can be eighth. And he surpasses that even. That, to me, is just iconic, emblematic. Just, it's representative of what goes on there. And I love to see that. I love to see Hamilton. He's just so interesting to me.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine was Perez's comment about, I'm happy for the team, but we have to speak later.
Yeah.
I just loved it. I mean, and you're right. Like, who knows what he's actually going to say behind closed doors. But I just want Perez to stand up for himself and let them know that that was inappropriate.
I didn't have any fun commentary for this race. I feel like the commentators kind of weren't expecting it to be as good as it was.
Someone said something about DRS that I thought was so, like, the other commentator was laughing about it. I didn't think it was that funny. Let me find
it. What did he say?
Oh, one of the commentators was like, I guess DRS stands for doesn't really stay, unfortunately. In Max's case.
They were also talking about, they're like, did it open up? Did you see it open up? I think I saw the flap open up, but then it closed.
The flap opening up? So nasty.
I saw the flap in the back.
And I guess takeaways? What do you got for takeaways?
The takeaway is that they should take away team orders.
Yeah, or at least there has to be a different way of employing them. I don't know. I feel like there should be a rule where, like, if one person is above a certain threshold to win, they have to let them win. I don't know what that threshold should be, but, like, if you reach a certain point where it would be really, really, really likely for you to win, I don't think it should be allowed that the other person can switch around. But if it's more like in flux, then maybe.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously there should be some degree of being able to gang up on a person.
Like, what do we mean?
You know, if it's two Red Bulls against one Mercedes, they should be able to coordinate in some way.
Coordinated attack, yeah.
Yeah, they should be able to attack and defend in coordinated ways. And so, you know, doing away with team orders would mean, like, what, there's no team anymore. It's just every man for himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's interesting, that what you said. But how would that work? That's too hard to administer. When one person can win, it's like, where's that threshold?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would have to be, I don't know. I don't know what that would look like. But
I think just the command to switch roles, basically, or the idea that you put someone on a less advantageous strategy, I don't think that should be allowed. Like, if a driver can prove, you pitted me again, which they used to do to Valtteri back in the Mercedes days, when
so
they
annoying.
Deliberately do something that makes your race worse, I think you should be able to be like, no.
Maybe the threshold is like the gap. Like, once someone has built, let's say two drivers are next to each other, once one person has built like a big enough gap to where it shows, like, hey, I'm able to put this car, use this car, you know, to the best of my advantage and put miles down. Whatever. I don't know.
Then you can't switch us.
Maybe.
Another big takeaway from this race is just how much reliability concerns are going to, you know, be a part of Formula One this season. Mm-hmm. is so concerning. I think last year Ferrari were one of the only teams where, you know, every race it would be like, oh, dang, one of them DNF, one of them DNF. But this time it's just like all of the front runners, it's a toss-up as to whether people are going to finish.
That's true. Yeah.
It's truly a toss-up. Honestly, two DNFs is good for this season.
Low key. There's been a lot of different teams that have DNF'd this season.
No one's ever had a DRS problem before, right?
I've seen, no.
No. For everybody to be, you know, having water leaks, and I'm just like, y'all, like, and it's fun. It's low-key kind of fun. I've been said reliability is mad fun, but I'm just like, something about these regulations are making the cars really hard to handle.
I've not thought about it that way, but you're so right.
It's crazy. Every single race. Maybe because we sort of became more fans of the sport when we were in one of the last years that the car had been in existence, and so they had been developed so much, and we just haven't seen a car in its first iteration, the first year that this generation is born. Basically, we're seeing, like, the cars in their infancy. But I'm curious to go back and see, like, when 2007 or 2008, when those hybrid whatever were introduced, was it this way of just, like, nobody could get it together?
I don't know.
I think every team has pretty much had a DNF this season. Anyway, something to think about.
That is something to think about.
Another thing to think about, now that Mercedes is in contention, not necessarily, you know, resurging to first, but it really changes things, no? To have a top six instead of a top four, what's going to happen?
I don't know. And I think widening, and this is so interesting in relation to what Mattia Binotto said when he was like, there's no other
competition. Yeah, we're not in competition.
It's like, wait. Like, now we have a situation in which some cars can actually move forward. I think it would be interesting because it breaks up who's getting what points. Like, that's what I was saying before. Do you remember that comment I read from Twitter? And it's like, let the other teams, like, win back and forth, because then it just allows, it, like, makes it hard for one team to really develop a lead.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting for that reason.
Yeah. And now that we're seeing team orders being employed so early, like, Red Bull has broken the seal. I feel like Ferrari is very close to being up next. And after that, Mercedes even. And I think that having a top six sort of influences the use of team orders in a way, because there's a car in between you who's sort of shaking things up and might put your number one driver on a disadvantageous strategy.
Yeah.
They might pressure the driver to do something different. And so it just makes it so that you have to prioritize your drivers, basically.
Yeah.
In, I think, a more fierce way when there's people in between you.
Yeah. And I think you have to think two cars ahead. It kind of reminds me of, like, the DRS train thing back a few races ago where Alonso was like, I don't understand what's happening ahead of me. It's like, you have to realize that there's, like, somebody in between the person that you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of strategy. It's cool. Yeah.
All right. So now we get to do something fun. We do this every episode. We have a fun game. For this game, what's our game today, Maya?
Our game today is, which driver is an only child?
By the way, Maya, so do you believe in the, like, only children rhetoric, that only children are, their personalities are somehow different? And categorically, across the board, sibling people act a certain way, only children people act
a certain way. I'm not going to, like, lay down my life for this cause, but I will say I do think, in general, only children have learned to relate to the world
differently.
And people differently.
And how do you feel about also sibling, like, in terms of year? So do you believe also in older siblings, middle siblings, young
generally,
siblings?
Generally, yeah. I think that's a little bit more variable, to be honest. But I do generally think that, like, if you're, like, people talk about this all the time, like, only daughter or, like, eldest daughters of, like, certain families get a lot of responsibility. I feel like that's usually true.
Youngest
can be the baby, whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to discuss our own family dynamic?
Yeah,
let's leave it to the end.
Let's leave it to the end. So let me go first, because I wrote down a list of some drivers, and I'll have Zaley guess if they are only children or not only children.
I have butterflies. But I guess, some of them are
Some of them will be really quick, because I think you know them already.
Mm-hmm.
So Charles Leclerc
has a brother named Arthur.
He has two brothers.
Oh, yeah. Two.
Two siblings.
So Arthur sounds so much like him. It's weird.
Oh, yes. Zaley sent me this TikTok of Charles's brother talking, and it sounded exactly like his voice. It's
so
crazy.
Weird.
Okay. What about Valtteri?
There's another half there that I don't know about. Mm. Yeah, he acts like a half.
A half.
Like there's another person that maybe he's interacting with that brought out his
sister. So you're right. That one would have thrown me. I wasn't sure what I would have said had I known. What about George Russell?
This is annoying because he acts like an only child for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't even say that, but he is annoying, and I feel like annoying, only child.
Yeah.
But he definitely has a sibling, doesn't he?
He has two siblings. Mm-hmm. He has a brother and a sister.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that, too, because all of these people come from these really wealthy families. I feel like only children are a consequence of, like, this is just, like, a huge generalization. I feel like if you have kids and you can afford to have kids, then you probably are going to have more kids.
Yeah.
And George Russell gives that. But I feel like even though he has no siblings, he probably
isn't that
got
close.
All the attention that an only child would get.
You know,
get,
it's an interesting, yeah, I think that's interesting, especially if one of your siblings isn't a Formula One driver, which is like the pinnacle of the sport, the motor racing sport. I wonder what that's like to be doing other things.
Right.
I mean, these people are kids of billionaires, so...
Mm-hmm.
I won't shed a tear for them, but I am saying, like, it must just be a different level of something. Because they have to be very involved growing up for that.
Probably live completely... This is. I feel bad that we're just theorizing like this, but I imagine that they probably live completely separate lives. George, from the age of 12, is out karting. The other sibling is at an international school in Switzerland. The other kid is... Like, you know what I mean? They live super individual lives, even though they're siblings.
What about Pierre? I think you knew this one. Or maybe you don't.
Pierre might be an only child. Is he?
No.
Hmm.
Youngest of four brothers.
Okay.
Four boys.
Okay.
I think that's fun. I would love to date a man who had three male siblings.
It's so... Everything about him is endearing. Everything about him is endearing. He's the youngest of four brothers.
Okay, let's get to the last two. Nicholas Latifi.
I think he has a sibling.
He has two siblings.
Okay.
And Alex Albon, which I think you know.
Yeah. He has like seven.
Sisters, yeah.
He has so many siblings.
Which kind of reads for me for him to have like female sisters. You have a bunch of sisters. I love that.
All right. Fernando Alonso.
Only child. I don't know. Wait, hold on. No, I think he would have a sister.
He has a sister.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo.
I think it's hard because there's something about him that feels, I don't know this one. There's something about him that feels like he would have a sibling just by how he interacts with people. He has like this playfulness that gives me, I have a sibling. I'm going to say yes. He has a brother.
He has a sister, Michelle. Okay. What about Lando? You already know this, right?
I think I do know he has siblings.
Yeah, lots and lots. He's the second oldest, along with three siblings, younger sisters, an older brother. Max Verstappen.
I think I know he has a sister.
Esteban Ocon.
He has siblings.
Only child.
Oh, really?
Does that take you out?
Yeah, it did. I totally thought he had siblings.
That makes sense to me because they're so, his family is really not, has no money. They like all traveled in a caravan to get him from place to place. And like, it just makes sense that they would need to put all their resources into him. And very well loved.
Yeah, of course.
What about Checo?
I think Checo would have a sibling.
Older sister and brother.
Okay.
Do you think he acts like the youngest?
I was actually going to say I think he would be younger, yeah. But I was going to say like a younger brother. Like he would have an older brother.
Hmm. Well, that's
the list.
That's the list. Does Esteban Ocon... So Maya, you're so strong with the only child versus siblings.
Yeah.
Why did the Esteban Ocon thing throw you off?
Why did I think he had siblings?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I guess I knew his story, it just kind of gave me that there would be a bunch of people in his house growing up. Like, he would have a bunch of siblings to, like, run around with him. But I think you're right, this sense, like, the fact that they had to travel and do all of this stuff with little money, it makes sense that he's an only child.
Okay. Well.
Well.
I'm glad that shook you up, because you're so...
I had one shake up. Excuse me.
Well, none of these people are only children. Which I don't know if that surprises. I guess that's no surprise, but none of these people are only children.
But that is interesting based on like the demographics of the people we polled. Like the fact that when you have money, maybe you have only kids. Maybe, I don't know. You said this earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to just pose the question to our audience?
Yeah, I do want to pose the question.
Who do you think is an only child?
Tell us in the comments below who you think is an only child of the two of us.
Uh-huh.
And if... You think neither of us are only children. You think both of us are only children. If you think we have siblings, I want to hear all the guesses.
I think that's too hard. I think it's cool to let them know one of us are only children.
Fine. One of us is an only children. One of us is an only child. Guess which one of us it is. Leave a note in the comments below.
So that's our episode. Thank you so much for listening. We cannot wait for next week. We're in Monaco. I think
super
it's a double header, right?
Super excited about
we're
Monaco.
Literally starting next week.
Yeah.
Oh, next week Maya won't be here.
Just gonna say I'm gonna go graduate, guys.
For context, we graduated in 2020, so we never had a graduation. So now everyone who's in our cohort, our age, is graduating now, including Maya, who's going back to her school, which is out in the boondocks. And so she won't be able to record. Not in the boondocks.
I'll be here
in
spirit. I want Zaylee to call in. Call me. Call me in.
We'll call you in, but we're going to have a guest host. Her name is Kiara. Get excited. She's a big fan of Formula One and an experienced podcast host. So she should bring new energy, but we are going to miss Maya so much.
I miss her already.
Woohoo.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Fiyang.